Chapter 28. I could hardly sleep the night before the court hearing, Catherine Sharp wrote, for I had been waiting for ages, it seemed, to see this very day. She was not alone. When the five women, on a frosty January day, arrived at the Court of Chancery, they found themselves surrounded. Newspapermen crowded around, flashing cameras in their eyes, and then packed the seats of the gallery inside. Berry hoped the girls would be ready for what lay ahead. He had prepped them all he could, calling the five women together 2 days ago to go through their testimony. Yet the women's mental strength was only part of the equation, and anyone could see that their physical health was failing. The past 6 months had not been kind to them. "The condition of certain of the girls," Berry wrote, "is truly deplorable." He was most concerned about Albina Larice. She could not extend her left leg more than 4 inches. She could not even put on her own shoes and stockings because she could not bend over. Her medical prognosis, along with Edna Hussman's, was now deemed the worst. Yet it was not the loss of her health that plagued her. "I have lost," Albina mourned, "2 children because I'm this way." Only the previous fall, Berry knew from what the doctors had told him, she'd lost a third baby. A baby who, if things had been different, might well have lived. She'd been so delighted when she found out she was pregnant, but Albina's happiness did not last long. For when her doctors discovered her condition, they would not permit development of the child due to her health. They ordered her to have a therapeutically induced abortion. "I've been so discouraged at times," Albina confided, "that I've thought about taking gas and ending it all." Dr. Humphreys had said that radium poisoning destroys his patient's will to live. Berry could only hope that the women on this day could find the will to fight. Edna Hussman was the first to give evidence. Louis almost had to carry his wife to the witness stand. His beautiful blonde Edna, when seen in snapshot, looked as model-esque as ever, striking a pose with one leg casually crossed in front of the other. But appearances were deceptive. She could no longer move her legs apart, for her hips had locked in place at that abnormal angle. She had also lost the use of her right arm. She could not even raise it to take the oath. The judge overseeing proceedings was Vice Chancellor John Backus, a very experienced man in his mid-60s. Berry must have been hopeful for a sympathetic hearing, for Backus's own father had died after being injured in a rolling mill. Backus wore a bushy moustache and glasses. He looked kindly on Edna as she prepared to give her testimony. Berry eased her in slowly, just as they'd rehearsed. Edna concentrated on him, answering simple questions about where she lived, how she was now a housewife, although, as she said outside the court, "I cannot keep my little home. I do what I can, but my husband does most of the work." Edna was tired. "The worst thing I have to put up with is not being able to sleep at night because of the pain in my hips," she revealed. So it didn't help when, only 8 questions in, as she began to outline the nature of her work at USRC, the lawyers for the corporation cut in with the first of their many objections. Berry was expecting it. On 4th of January, he'd taken another 3-hour deposition with the company lawyers present, this time from the Newark dentist, Dr. Barry. Once again, they'd questioned everything. Irene Rudolph's dental file had a note that read, Recovery? Okay. Which Barry explained meant that she had recovered from the anaesthetic